He killed, Harper begins. Edwin spins on her, snapping as he finds a target for his frustration.
I don't know what you thought you saw out there, girl, but no one from Rockden is going to murder our people for a few bows and supplies. You lost your head in those woods, and you won't be going back out there anytime soon. Turn in your bow and hunting knife. You'll help Mabel with the cooking now.
Rage fills Harper's eyes. Impotent rage. She tried to step out of her assigned role, and she is being smacked right back into it. I want to sympathize, but she accused an innocent man of mass murder because she wanted a dog. Sympathy is a little hard to come by after that.
Give Casey her dog, Edwin says with an abrupt wave.
Harper grips the leash. She's mine. In forfeit for what they did.
You think we'll share our food so you can have a pet?
It's not a pet. It can track and hunt and...
The only animals in this town are the ones we cook on a fire. Give Casey her dog. Now.
Harper looks at me, her eyes blazing. Then she drops the leash and knees Storm. The dog falls back in shock and I race over, and whatever Harper sees in my face, she decides not to stick around. I crouch beside Storm and pet her, soothing her as she keeps looking at Harper's receding back in confusion.
We demand justice, Eric,
Edwin says behind me.
We demand this killer. When we catch, you will not bring him to me. I know you won't. Casey would promise to convey our demand to the council, but you know they'll refuse. So you will tell me only that you'll catch him and justice will be served. That's not what I want. I am keeping Casey until you bring me this man.
What? I rise.
Hell no, Dalton says. Do not even. Casey stays, with the dog, if that helps. She will be our guest until you return. Guest? We call that a fucking hostage.
She is my guest.
Yeah?
Dalton strides toward him.
If you keep her, this psycho is never going to be caught. She's the goddamn detective. You want a hostage? Take me. That is far more trouble than... I remember how my mother was treated here.
Dalton stops in front of the old man and lowers his voice.
A child does not forget that. He does not forgive that. The answer is fuck no. I realize Casey is now your wife, and I would not let any woman from Rockden stay here. Casey is a fucking detective, which means she needs to be out there hunting for this guy.
So do you. I turn to Edwin. I understand what you're trying to do, but you need to come up with a solution that won't hinder the actual hunt for this man.
Take me,
says a voice behind us. I look to see Wallace, who has been so silent I've forgotten he was there. Now he steps forward.
This is my fault, not theirs,
Wallace says.
I hired Rockden to imprison the man who killed your people. They weren't equipped to do so, which the council failed to tell me. Eric and Casey had nothing to do with that. I made the mistake here. And who are you?
Edwin says.
The father of the man who did this to your people.
Chapter 49. If I could have stopped Wallace before he said that, I would have. But once the words are out, there is no taking them back, and there is no way of walking out of this village with him. We must leave Wallace behind. Leave him and trust that no harm will come to him. He is a smart man. He didn't interfere as we dealt with Edwin, so I feel confident he's not going to do anything that will endanger him in our absence. It just won't be the most comfortable way to spend his Yukon trip. They don't let us speak to Wallace in private. All we can do is talk to him within earshot of the others, reassuring him. A group of settlers escort us into the forest. Then they put our weapons on the ground and tell us to stand with our backs to them while they retreat. We do. Only when they give us the signal do we pick up our guns. Then we walk in the other direction. Can we go back to the scene of the massacre? I say when we're out of earshot. Dalton nods. He leads me there. The bodies are gone. Even the blood has seeped into the ground and disappeared. And when we arrive, the only thing that tells me this is definitely the right place is a red fox. It's in the clearing, so busy sniffing around that it doesn't see or smell us. It's snuffling madly, smelling death and seeing no sign of it. When Storm spots the fox, she lets out a bark of greeting. The fox's head jerks up. It sees her, and it bolts into the undergrowth, leaping logs and ripping through dead leaves, while Dalton digs in his heels and clenches the leash in both hands. Once the fox is gone, I pat Storm and head into the clearing. Then I search. After a few minutes, Dalton says,
"Tell me what you're looking for and I can help."
I shake my head as if I don't know, too distracted to answer. That's not entirely a lie. I don't know specifically what I'm looking for, but I'm here with a purpose, a question niggling the back of my mind, not ready to be voiced. Maybe never ready to be voiced. Not unless I find evidence to support it. So I just look. Then I hunker in the middle of the clearing and observe. When I finally start to rise, Dalton says,
"You gonna tell me what happened?"
"Hmm?"
"With that girl. She lied, didn't she? Outright lied."
"Yes." Silence. I take another look around before answering his unspoken question. "She wanted Storm." More silence. I glance over, and he's just standing there, brow furrowed.
"The dog?"
he says finally. I drop to all fours and peer about near ground level, still searching. Then I say, "An error in judgment on my part. When she was interested in Storm, I jumped on that as a topic of conversation, of connection." I rise and brush off my knees. I told her how we've taught Storm to track. I showed her how well-trained she was. I said how gentle she was, how much bigger she'd get. Apparently, that was like showing off your new vehicle's special features to a car thief.
"You're serious?"
I nod.
"That's fucked up."
"It is." I stand in the clearing. Think. Think some more. I'm so enwrapped in my thoughts that I don't realize Dalton is right there until I turn and bash into him. When I lean against him, his arm goes around me.
"You okay?"
he says. I wasn't the one accused of murdering three people. I feel him shrug as he says,
"It was all for show. Just pissed me off."
I chuckle and shake my head. His arm tightens around me.
"Something's bugging you."
"Everything's bugging me," I say as I step back. "We've left Gregory Wallace with people who know his stepson murdered their friends. To get him back, we need to turn over Brady, which means finding Brady, which we've been trying to do since this whole damn thing started, and..." Another squeeze as Dalton kisses the top of my head.
"We'll get Wallace back. In the meantime, they won't hurt him. No point in it. If we'd left Storm, that'd be a whole different matter, apparently. But no one's gonna want Wallace."
I give a strained laugh. Dalton continues.
"This just raises the stakes, motivates us. Because, you know, we were just sitting on our asses before, trying to decide if we wanted to bother looking for this Brady guy."
I shake my head.
"Let's get to Rockton,"
Dalton says.
"See if Phil made it back okay."
Phil? Oh, shit.
"Yeah, I know. Come on, we'll..."
"One last thing. Sorry, I just want to check..." I trail off as my brain finally homes in on the source of that niggling thought. As Dalton follows, he says,
"Something's up."
I just want to check this." A grunt says he isn't happy with my answer. He doesn't ask again, though, just lets his dissatisfaction be known. "This is where we found Harper's grandmother, right?" I say.
"Yeah."
He points, and I see that some scavenger has rooted through the dirt, looking for the source of the blood. "Harper came from..." I turn. "This direction." Dalton nods. I walk that way and find a spot where vegetation has been crushed. "She watched us from here, which means..." I look around.
"She came that way,"
Dalton says, pointing.
"That's what you're looking for, right?"
It is. Thanks.
The path where she saw Brady is over there. We can follow it, but if I thought that would do any good, we'd have tracked him from there right away.
I know. A soft growl of frustration.
So what the hell are you looking for, Casey?
I don't know exactly. Three beats of silence as I backtrack on Harper's trail. Then he follows. He wants to demand answers, but he knows that's not how I work. My ego needs proof before I'll voice any outlandish theories. Harper's trail doesn't lead directly to the path. She meandered, and when Dalton sees that, he says,
"She was trying to decide what to do. Follow Brady or go back to the camp."
I'm nodding when I spot something on the ground. I walk over and bend. It looks like the shredded remains of an animal. I prod it with a stick, expecting to see a head or leg or tail. I don't. It's just hide.
A food pouch,
Dalton says. A hide pouch that must have held food, now ripped apart with no trace of what it once contained. He lifts and turns it over in his hand, examining the craftsmanship.
For settlement.
He peers into the forest, both toward the camp and out in the direction of the path.
So Harper saw Brady on the path and then followed his trail back to the camp. That's why it meanders. He was making his way in the direction of the path, but didn't quite know where it was. He dropped this.
He shakes the pouch.
So,
he peers up and down the path. Then he goes still. His head jerks up. Storm's muzzle does the same, her nose wriggling madly.
Back up,
Dalton says. What? His hand wraps around my wrist as he starts propelling us backward. I take each step with care, rolling it, but Storm's paws crunch down on dead leaves. Dalton whispers a curse just as she starts to whine. Loudly whine, while straining at the lead. Dalton stops. His gaze swings across the landscape. Storm dances and whines. What did you see? I whisper.
Movement. Something big.
Something big that Storm desperately wants to get to. Dalton has the leash wrapped around his hand, but he's distracted, looking about. When I see Storm hunker down, I know what's coming. Eric, I say, and I lunge to grab the lead. Storm leaps. A powerful leap that catches Dalton off guard, and he stumbles, the leash whipping free, my fingers grazing it, wrapping around it, only to feel the leather burn through my hand as the dog takes off. Storm! I run after her. I am aware, even before Dalton shouts, that I am making the exact same mistake I made when she went after the cougar. But that doesn't mean I stop. I can't. I hear Dalton coming after me, and I double down, terrified he's going to stop me. The messed up muscles in my bad leg scream for mercy, but Dalton shoots past.
Gun, he snarls. Get your damn gun out.
I do. Ahead, I can still see Storm, her black rump bobbing. Then I spot a figure with its hands out to ward her off. Dalton shouts. The figure says,
whoa,
and Storm takes him down. Then laughter rings out, sputtering laughter. Dalton slows, shaking his head. As I jog over, Jacob struggles to get to his feet while pushing Storm off.
No one can sneak up on you guys, can they?
Jacob says.
Yeah, because sneaking up on people who have these,
Dalton waves his gun,
is such a good idea.
Cranky, Jacob grins my way.
That's the word you use for him, right?
Yes,
Dalton says.
I'm cranky because my damn fool brother just tried to get himself killed by sneaking up on me when I'm in this fucking forest looking for
the guy who killed all those people.
Dalton eases back.
Yeah, he escaped and
found him.
What?
Jacob's grin widens.
Does that make you less cranky, brother?
Depends on how much longer you stand here instead of taking me to him.
Chapter 50. We'd speculated that Jacob might have abandoned his camp because he got wind of irresistible prey. And he had. His prey was Oliver Brady. Jacob was camping after taking down the bull caribou when he spotted the man he'd met with us a week ago, and he knew Brady ought not to be out wandering the forest alone. Jacob had his bow and knife and a water skin, and that was all he needed. He followed Brady for 2 days, waiting for an opportunity to take him down. He didn't get one. The first night, when Brady massacred the settlers, Jacob lost him late in the day. He managed to find him again yesterday afternoon and planned to capture him that night, but...
"He met up with a guy," Jacob says.
I glance at Dalton. He says nothing but shoves his hands deeper into his pockets. "Can you describe the person?" I ask.
"I didn't get too close, but I could tell he was smaller than your guy."
Jacob moves a limb from the path.
"No, not smaller, shorter."
Jacob goes on to say the guy had short dark hair, maybe graying, but he wore a hat so it was hard to tell. Clean-shaven, dressed in jeans, boots, and a bulky jacket. Carried a gun. I reach for Dalton's hand, our fingers interlocking. Jacob notices and says,
"He's one of yours?"
I nod. "Our lead militia. He took off last night. He was due to go home the day Brady arrived. We suspected he helped Brady escape, but we hoped Brady had just conned him into it, convinced our guy he was innocent."
"That could still be the case, though, right? Brady tells your guy he's innocent and gets his help escaping, and then they meet to get through the forest. Paid escort."
"Yeah,"
Dalton says.
"But if we keep telling ourselves there's a logical explanation, we're going to end up on the business end of a gun, finding out there isn't."
"I guess so."
We keep walking. I ask Jacob where Brady has been, what he's been doing. Jacob first encountered him over by the mountain, where we found Val's body. From there, Brady wandered, or so it seemed to us, but as Dalton points out, without wilderness navigation experience, he probably thought he was getting someplace. It's even possible that he climbed the mountain to get a better vantage point and in the distance spotted the first settlement, because that's the direction he seemed to head. From the mountain, he must have met up with the hunting party and killed them. When Jacob found Brady's trail again the next day, he saw him watching the first settlement.
"He scaled a tree on the far side. He kept his distance, but he stayed up there until early evening before he came down and took off."
Had he seen the village from the mountain, thought it was a town, and made his way there, only to realize those people lived even more primitively than we did? That they had no ATVs or motor vehicles or horses he could steal? But the first settlement was only 2 hours' walk from where Brady massacred settlers for their belongings. Why do that if he thought he was close to the end of his journey? So many questions, all of them unanswerable until we have Brady. Jacob had spent today tracking his quarry. Plan A had been to capture him at night and march him back at knife point. Plan B had been to wound him from afar and do the same. But Kenny's arrival kiboshed that. Then, as Jacob tracked them, he heard the first settlement men who'd escorted us into the forest. He overheard enough to realize we were in the area. So he'd made note of Brady's current location and hurried to find us. We reach Brady's camp. He's not there. That's only mildly disappointing. We figured he'd only pulled over to rest. But he's been here very recently, so we'll find him. There are two wrappers in the clearing where Jacob had seen Brady and Kenny sitting on logs. Protein bar wrappers, the kind we keep stashed in the militia equipment shed. I pick one up and examine it.
"Yeah, that's ours," Dalton says.
I know. Something about the wrapper nudges at me, though, telling me to look closer. I see these bars almost daily. Dalton insists we inventory any pack before taking it out. This flavor is my personal favorite, chocolate peanut butter. Or it used to be my favorite. The company revamped the recipe lately and changed the packaging, sticking on a new and improved taste band, which I'd grumbled should read new and cheaper ingredients, because it definitely did not taste better. This is old stock, I say, confirming as I check the expiration date. Dalton shrugs. Jacob has already headed out to find the trail, and Dalton's struggling against telling me to put the damn wrapper away and come on before the trail gets cold. "We ran out of these months ago," I say.
"Yeah, okay."
He peers into the forest, head tilting as if he's listening for his brother. Storm tugs at the leash, seconding his impatience. "Did we have old stock anywhere?" I ask.
"I don't know,"
he says.
"Is that important?"
"It isn't. Not right now. But it's bugging me, like so many things." I fold the wrapper and put it in my pocket as I follow him from the clearing. Jacob finds the trail easily. Brady is no outdoorsman. Once he got far enough from Rockton, he stopped using even amateur methods of hiding his trail. He's walking along what he probably thinks is a path, but it's really just a deer route. That means it's narrow, and we find freshly broken twigs and crushed vegetation and even footprints when the ground gets marshy. Jacob is in the lead, maybe 20 paces ahead. It's impossible to walk silently with an 80-pound Newfoundland panting and lumbering alongside us, so we're hanging back. When Jacob finds the footprints, he gives a bird call, and through the trees I see him gesture at the ground. Then he keeps going. We reach the spot, and I see what he was indicating and crouch to examine footprint impressions in the soft ground. Some of the prints are partials, just a toe or heel squelching down, the rest of the foot on harder ground. But I count 5 nearly complete and distinct shoe impressions. 3 come from sneakers. Brady had been wearing sneakers the last time I saw him. When I motion for Dalton, he puts his foot beside one print, and I can confirm it's the same size, a 9. Average size feet from an average size man. Yet they give me that now familiar niggle. I didn't expect Brady would still be wearing sneakers. Why not, though? That's what he fled wearing, and it's not as if he'd been able to find other footwear in the forest.
"Those are his," Dalton says, "since you seem to be wondering."
"I am."
"They match the prints he left when he first ran. I remember thinking they're shitty shoes, the kind of fancy sneakers that wear out after a month out here."
I nod. He's right. But something. I turn to the other prints. These are boots. Rockton boots. We don't exactly have a shopping mall of selection in town. Dalton finds a couple of styles that fit his criteria. Good for outdoors, readily available, durable, and reasonably priced. And that's what you get. These are the type I wore until I went down to Whitehorse with Dalton and bought a pair better suited to my small feet. I flash back to last month, in the station, waterproofing my new boots. Anders came in with Kenny and picked up the boot I'd already done. He whistled.
"Nice."
"Yep, I'm spoiled. Perks of sleeping with the boss."
"You mean compensation for sleeping with the boss."
Kenny chuckled at that and took the boot from Anders.
"These are nice. Good arches. That's the problem with mine. Not enough support for high arches. Hurts like a bitch after a day-long hunt."
"How long have you been here?" Anders says.
"And you're just telling us now?"
Kenny shrugged.
"I didn't want to complain."
It had been too late to get him special boots, and when Dalton said we had a stash of other ones, different designs for those who couldn't wear the usuals, Kenny had brushed it off. That's how he was. Never wanted to make waves, never wanted to ask for anything special. Like the bullied kid who found his way into the cool clique and just wanted to ride that out, behave himself in case the others decided he was a pain in the ass and kicked him out. Which is why helping Brady doesn't... I rub my neck. Stop making excuses. My flashback does prove something. That I know Kenny left Rockton wearing boots like these. Dalton moves his foot beside one print without prompting. It's smaller than his. Smaller enough to be noticeable, and yet significantly larger than my lady size 5. A men's 7, maybe. I remember Anders joking that Kenny should try on mine. That they might fit. Which suggested Kenny's feet were small.
"Casey?"
I nod and straighten. This is the worst part of community policing. Investigating a crime when the person responsible is someone I know. Someone I like. I need to remind myself that beyond the few people I associate closely with, I don't really know anyone in Rockton. I cannot know their pasts. Even people without that past can come here and commit horrible crimes. I grieve for the loss of the Kenny I thought I knew. I'm deep in my thoughts, following Dalton and—
Stop right there! A voice rings out. Hands on your head, you son of a bitch! Or I swear I'll fucking shoot you and drag your fucking ass back to Rockton!
I know that voice. I even know the diction. A poor imitation of Dalton by a guy who wants to be him. Kenny? I whisper. I was just thinking of Kenny, and therefore I must be mishearing, or— Dalton is running, doubled over, running full out. I'm taking off after him, my gun out as he pulls his. We pass a tree, and ahead I see Kenny holding a gun at Jacob's back. Chapter 51.
Turn around, Kenny barks.
Jacob says something I can't hear, his voice low, words calming. He turns, and Kenny gives a start.
Eric?
Kenny says to Jacob. Jacob lowers his hood.
Who the hell are—
Kenny begins.
Kenny!
Dalton thunders. Kenny wheels, gun lowering, the perfect opportunity for Jacob to grab it, but he just stays with his hands on his head. Kenny realizes he's lowered his weapon and corrects his stance, but Dalton sees that gun go up, trained on his brother, and he lets out a roar. When he snarls,
"Drop that fucking—"
he doesn't even need to finish. Kenny literally throws the gun aside. The gun hits the ground hard enough that I half expect it to fire, but it only bounces into the undergrowth as Dalton knocks Kenny flying. Kenny babbles something from the ground. I reach them, but I still can't make out what he's saying. Then Dalton has his gun trained on Kenny, saying,
"Get your ass in the air!"
And when Kenny doesn't obey within 1.5 seconds,
"Get your fucking ass in the air!"
Jacob says,
"Eric! You think I'm being an asshole?"
Dalton snarls. Then he turns to Jacob.
"This is the head of my fucking militia. The man who let Brady get away and then came out here to join him."
What? Kenny says.
No. I mean, yes, I let him get away. I didn't do my job right. I screwed up, but I didn't come out here to— Get in position,
Dalton says.
Now!
Getting in position means assuming the position that's like a downward dog, feet and hands on the ground, butt in the air. The first time I saw Dalton make a guy do it, I thought Dalton was trying to shame the guy, make him look ridiculous. And while it does, that's just a bonus. The beauty of the position is that the average person cannot leap out of it and attack. If he tries to rise, a foot on the ass will put him down again. It is also, as I later discovered, a trick Dalton learned from Cipher. Kenny gets into position, saying,
"Just listen to me, Eric. I left a note. Didn't you get—"
"Yeah, Casey found it. Covering your ass in case we found you alone. You weren't alone a couple of hours ago, were you?"
What?
"You were seen with Oliver Brady."
Kenny starts sputtering denials, which only pisses Dalton off, and Jacob is trying to interject until finally I step in, arms waving for silence. Dalton gets the last word, of course, but then backs down, a jerk of his chin telling me to handle this.
"Kenny,"
I say, "just be quiet and listen, okay?" I turn to Jacob. "Is this the guy you saw with Brady?"
"I didn't get a look at the guy's face," Jacob says.
"This could be him. That's all I can say."
"It wasn't,"
Kenny begins.
"Wait,"
I say.
"He's the right size,"
Jacob continues.
"Jeans, boots, jacket, all the same or close enough to what I remember."
"Which is town-issue clothing," I say, and Kenny nods, relieved. "Eric, can you give me one of Kenny's boots?" I train my gun on Kenny while Dalton removes a boot and hands it to me. It's the one I expect. Town-issue. Same tread as the prints I saw with Brady's. "Have you been tracking Brady?" I say,
I've been trying, Kenny says. But I'm not Eric. I made a lot of noise, and I figured maybe Brady would see me and think I look like easy pickings, and then I'd get the jump on him. It was a stupid plan. I haven't even heard anyone until this morning, and that was you guys. He glances at Jacob. You're one of Eric's contacts?
The inflection tells me he knows full well Jacob is more. The resemblance is undeniable. But I only say, yes, Jacob is a local scout.
I thought he was Brady. He's about the right size, and he's got light hair. His hood was up, or I'd have noticed his hair's too long, plus the beard.
Kenny exhales.
I'm sorry. I heard someone, and then I saw a guy the right size, and I jumped the gun.
I compared Kenny's boot to Dalton's. Kenny's is a couple of sizes smaller. Have you been on this path? I say.
I was on a bigger one over there. He points left. I might have been on this one earlier, but I don't think so. I've been heading for that mountain.
He points to our right. I look at Jacob. The person you saw with Brady, he was definitely with him, talking to him, sitting with him.
I heard voices. They seemed to be talking. They sat together, and I saw the guy pass Brady food.
Eric, can you empty Kenny's pockets and backpack? He does. There's a water skin and basic tools. For food, he's brought dried meat and a handful of protein bars. You took these from the supply cabinet? I say, waving the bars. Kenny nods.
I'll repay them.
Not my biggest concern right now. I go through the handful of bars. You already ate the chocolate peanut butter ones?
I didn't take any. I know those are your favorite, so I leave them for you. The cookie ones are good, though. She's not asking because she's hungry, Dalton says. Right. Sorry. I didn't take any of the chocolate peanut butter.
What about old stock?
Old stock?
There was a box of chocolate peanut butter that went missing a while ago. Do you know anything about that? Dalton's gaze cuts my way, but he says nothing. I'm bullshitting about the missing box. The truth is that we don't monitor the bars that tightly, figuring if the militia want to sneak a few extras, that's a perk for their help. When I say that, though, Kenny looks uncomfortable. Kenny, I prod.
Someone took a bunch of old stock, he says. I don't know what flavors. I just know that when I did inventory a while back, we had out-of-date bars, and I put them aside to ask Will what to do with them, and they went missing. I decided not to say anything. They were old stock.
You have no idea who took them? That uncomfortable look again.
No, I don't.
He's lying. I don't know why, but I need this answer. I study Kenny, the set of his jaw, the look in his eye, and I see it's not time to press the matter. Eric, I lift Kenny's boot, and he nods. When I pass Storm's lead to Jacob, Dalton's ready to argue, but I say, I'll be quick, and I get a reluctant nod. I take off at a jog to the footprints. They're just around the corner, and when I reach them, I look back to see Dalton. He's moved about 10 steps from Kenny, his gun still on the suspect, but staying within sight range of me. I crouch with the boot in hand. First, I confirm, beyond a doubt, that the tread is correct. Eyeballing it, I'd also say the size is, but when I lower the boot below the prints, I see that the ones in the soft earth appear to be a size smaller. I prod the edge of the print. While the ground is damp, it doesn't seem wet enough for the print to have contracted a size. That's possible, though. Soft ground shifts. If the boot is the right type and almost the right size... Wait. It's not the same boot. Closer examination shows that the wear pattern doesn't match. Kenny's are worn with an uneven tread, maybe the result of unsupportive boots and high arches. The prints look like new boots. The tread, very distinct. I check the tag inside Kenny's. Then I look at the prints again. New boots. Rocked an issue. Size 7 men's. Small for a man's shoe. Not small for a woman's. Not unreasonably large, either. That works out to maybe a 9. While we have women's boot sizes, many choose to wear the guys, finding them sturdier. I work through Jacob's description of the person he spotted with Brady. Clean-shaven, shorter than Brady, a bulky jacket which would hide breasts. There is a person with Brady. This person showed up at some point between day one and last night. This person is from Rockton, as evidenced by the clothing and the bars. Someone has betrayed us. That person does not seem to be Kenny. One name keeps coming to mind. My other suspect for the poisoning, for Brady's accomplice. Jen. I'm working through how much of it fits when Dalton calls.
Casey?
I've been bent over and out of his sight too long, and it's a testament to his self-control that he didn't shout,
Butler!
The second I disappeared. I rise and see him farther down the path, anxiously straining to spot me, resisting the urge to run and check. When I wave, I swear I hear him exhale from 30 feet away. I glance down at the prints one last time, but they aren't telling me anything new. I'm turning from them when I see a flicker in the bush. I drop Kenny's boot and raise my gun. Dalton gives an alarmed,
Casey?
And his boots thump as he runs toward me. In the bushes, I can see a form big enough to be dangerous, and I back against a tree, my gun raised. A woman steps out. She's filthy, with snarled hair and ragged clothes, and I think of Nicole. A woman, lost in these woods or taken captive, escaping and hearing voices and making her way toward us. Then I see the knife. A rusted one with a broken blade and a makeshift handle. When I see that, I realize I'm looking at a hostel. I have not seen one since I arrived in Rockton. I have heard some stories from Dalton and read others in the archives, but I am still not prepared. This woman could have just crawled from a pit after a decade of captivity. Matted hair, dirt-crusted skin and clothing. When she draws back her lips, I see chipped and yellowed teeth. But she has not crawled from a pit. She has not been held captive. She has chosen to do this to herself. And yet I am not certain she has chosen. Deep in my brain, tucked away into the morass of things I will pursue later, I have a theory. A wild theory that I used to joke sounded like I'd been spending too much time with Brent. I will never make that joke again, but the truth of it remains. That I have a theory about the hostels that I am ashamed to admit to anyone but Dalton because it smacks of paranoia. A theory for which I have zero proof and that only makes it worse. Makes me fear it is truly madness arising from hate and prejudice. A place no detective can afford to draw from. My theory is that the hostels are not Rockton residents who left and went native in the most extreme way. That such a thing is not possible, not on such a scale, because that is not what happens to humans when they voluntarily leave civilization. Jacob is not like this. The residents of the first settlement are not like this. To become this, I believe you need additional circumstances. Mental illness, drug addiction, medical interference. My theory is that the council is responsible for what I see here. I don't know why they'd do that. I have hypotheses, but I won't let them do more than flit through my brain, or I may begin to believe I truly am losing my mind in this wild place. I see this woman. I see what she has done to herself. And it's not just dirt and lack of care. Those only disguise what Dalton's stories have told me to look for. The dirt isn't from lack of bathing. It has been plastered on like war paint. Under it, I see ritualized scar patterns, and the teeth that appear chipped have actually been filed. I see a woman who should not exist outside of some futuristic novel, a world decimated by war, ravaged by loss. People reverting to primitive forms in a desperate attempt to survive, to frighten their enemies. Which would make perfect sense If people up here had enemies. If there was not enough open land and fresh water and wild game, that the only force we need fight is the fickle and all-powerful god of this world, Mother Nature. I stare at this woman, and she stares back. I point my gun. She brandishes her knife. Dalton is running toward us, running and paying no attention to anything except me and this woman. Movement flashes in the trees, the bushes rippling. "Eric," I shout, "stop!" He sees something at that last second. He spins, gun rising, but his back is unprotected and there is another movement behind him. Then something white flying toward him. I yell, "Eric!" And he dodges. And what looks like a sliver of white flies past his head. It's a dart, a bone dart. He's turning, and then there's a figure in flight leaping from a tree. Dalton lashes out with his gun. A thwack, and the man goes down, howling. Another figure lunges from the forest. Jacob races around the bend, and Storm barrels past, and I fire. I lift my gun over my head and fire. Chapter 52. When I fire overhead, everyone stops, even Storm. The man who was charging at Dalton sees the dog, and he raises something in his hand, and Jacob drops on Storm, covering her. "Stop," I say. I don't know if it will do any good. I believe they are capable of understanding the word. I do not believe they are capable of caring about it. I'm not even sure the guns matter, if the shot didn't just startle them. Then I hear a voice, and the words are so garbled it doesn't sound like English.
"Get on the ground,"
one of the men says again, slower, clearer, as the man Dalton knocked down rises. Two others step up beside Dalton. Two men armed with clubs. One raises his and barks what I am certain is not a word, but the meaning is clear.
"Do as he says, Eric," Jacob says. "Please just do as he says."
He glances over his shoulder and says,
"You too."
And that must be for Kenny, sneaking up. Dalton holsters his gun, and I wait for someone to tell him to hand it over instead. But no one does. Dalton kneels and puts his hands on his head. His expression is blank, but I see the rage in his eyes. This is the second time today we have been ambushed, and that feels like failure, as if we are characters in a bumbling cop movie. But the truth is that this is the Yukon wilderness, and we are always one step away from ambush, by human or beast. The forest swathes her threats in bush and shadow, and we can walk all day and see no more than hairs, or we can be forced to lower our weapons twice. In all this, the woman before me has not moved. When I fired, she flinched, but now she stands exactly where she was, watching me, studying. No one else pays me any mind. I'm standing with my gun out, but they don't seem to care. They have assessed our party and dismissed me. One man watches Jacob, still atop Storm, but makes no move to go closer. Four men surround Dalton, and something tells me that this is all that matters. Which is not wrong. Not wrong at all. The man who spoke before prods Dalton with his club.
"Jacket!"
Dalton glowers, but even before Jacob can speak up, Dalton takes off his pack and tosses it aside. The jacket follows.
"Gun!"
He lays that down.
"Shirt!" "What the hell?"
"Eric,"
Jacob says, and there's a quaver in his voice. Jacob has spent his life avoiding the hostiles. There was an encounter years ago when he'd been a young teen after his parents died. I don't know details, but he said enough for me to suspect it was not unlike the ordeal Nicole faced, in every way. "We'll be fine," I say. "We'll be fine." Dalton grunts and strips off his t-shirt.
"There. If you want the rest, you're gonna need to..."
"We will take the rest."
The leader grabs Dalton's gun and swings it up. I shout, "Eric!" and lunge. Dalton drops to the ground, the gun fires, and I fire. I shoot the leader. I do not think about what I'm doing. I saw that gun rise on Dalton, and I knew what was happening. They made Dalton remove his jacket and shirt so they didn't ruin the garments when they put a bullet through him. The leader falls. Dalton's gun drops from his hand, and Dalton scrambles for it. It takes only a split second, and then we're back to back, our guns raised. The leader lies on the ground, blood pumping, his hands over the hole through his chest. His mouth works, his eyes wide, and not one of his own people even looks his way. He is defeated. He is useless. He is forgotten.
"Jacob! Kenny!"
Dalton shouts.
"Go!"
There is a pause, and I know Jacob and Kenny are both assessing, waiting for one of the remaining hostiles to turn on them, to raise a weapon, let loose a dart. But they do not. All they care about is us.
"Jacob!"
Dalton says again. Then there's a rustle in the undergrowth, and while neither of us dares look that way, I know Jacob and Kenny are retreating. That's the smart move. This is bad enough already, with Dalton and me back to back, guns drawn, three armed men surrounding us, a woman with a knife just a few feet away.
"Back the fuck up!"
Dalton says to the men. The one with the club steps toward us.
"That is not backing the fuck up,"
Dalton says.
"I know you understand English, so do not pull this bullshit caveman routine on me. I know where you're from, the same place I am, and you will not pretend you don't fucking understand me."
One of the other two men raises a knife.
"Drop that," Dalton barks.
"If you take a step toward us with that..."
The man draws back as if to throw the knife. I shoot his hand. He lets out a howl, blood spraying, knife dropping. Then he charges. I kick. I don't aim for his groin, but that's where my foot connects. He falls back, yowling, and the two other men run at us, weapons raised. Dalton fires. I kick again and then swing my gun, hitting my attacker in the face. I hear Dalton snarl for the men to stop. Just fucking stop before we put fucking bullets through their fucking heads. We do not want to do that. To them, though, that does not make us merciful. It makes us weak. It makes us vulnerable. I kick. I pistol whip. Dalton shoots, aiming to wound, not kill. My foot makes contact. So do my gun and Dalton's bullet, and the three men are bleeding. Bleeding and enraged. Club flying, knife slashing. I hear an oomph as the club strikes Dalton in the chest. I wheel to fend off his attacker, and a knife slashes my jacket. I remember a story Brent told once about a wolverine. He'd watched it defend its kill from a grizzly. Defend it to the death, the wolverine knowing it had no chance of winning against the bigger predator, but unable to surrender. That's what this is. Only we cannot walk away. Cannot just say, "You win, take our stuff and go." That is not an option. It never was an option. The hostiles can't win this fight against our guns. It doesn't matter. Our reluctance to use those guns is like blood in the water. The smell of weakness drives them into a frenzy, even if they must realize we won't let them beat and stab us to death while we hold loaded guns. They will force our hand. The club blow winded Dalton. He lowers his gun, and his attacker is pulling back to strike him again. Dalton raises his gun, but he hesitates, and I know he will not pull that trigger. Something in his brain says he doesn't need to just yet. He will not use lethal force until he is moments from death himself.
"I can fix this. Don't worry. I can fix this."
Dalton diverts his aim to the man's arm. His finger moves to the trigger, and I fire. I must fire. I will not gamble on his life. I have already killed one man today, and if I have to kill three more to walk away from this, then that is what I must do. They leave us no choice. I fire. My aim isn't perfect. This is not a slow dance. Only a few heartbeats pass between Dalton being clubbed and me realizing I must shoot before he is hit again. I pull the trigger, and my bullet hits Dalton's attacker in the shoulder. It is enough. He goes down, and I spin on the other two men. Dalton shoots one in the leg. The other is coming at me, and I raise my gun, and Dalton has his up, yelling,
"Stop, you stupid son of a bitch! Just stop!"
A shot fires. The man flies sideways, and Kenny stands there, gun gripped in both hands, his eyes wide. The hostile slumps to the ground, shot through the chest. Kenny stands frozen, breathing hard.
Eric?
I hear the voice, and I think it must be Jacob. It isn't Kenny, and it comes from off to the side. It's pitched high, but I am still sure it is Jacob. He's frightened. Then there's a movement on my right as Jacob and Storm cautiously approach from the left. I turn toward the voice. The woman stands on the path. I have forgotten the woman. She's gripping her knife, and there are four of her people on the ground, two dead and two injured, moaning and bleeding. And she doesn't seem to see them. She's staring at Dalton.
Eric.
Chapter 53. Even before Dalton says,
Marianne,
I know who this is. A woman who left Rockton years ago. A biologist who'd mentored Dalton, taught him, shared his insatiable curiosity about the world around them. When Marianne left with others, his father made the militia pursue. Rockton did not allow residents to become settlers. Dalton had been the one to find their camp, with evidence they'd been attacked by hostiles. A year later, he saw Marianne again, and she was a hostile. Did not recognize him, tried to kill him, almost forced him to kill her. Marianne is one of those pieces that makes me think my theory is not so far-fetched after all. I look at this woman, and I try to imagine a biologist, wrapped in conversation with a teenage boy, a brilliant woman with a doctorate who decided to go live in her beloved natural world, and who made that choice willingly, chose that, and ended up as this. She looks at me, and she's squinting, studying me as she did before, when we faced off and she did not attack. She squints as if trying to place me, too. Or maybe it's more than that. Maybe she's looking at me and seeing a mirror, reflecting something that sparks forgotten memories.
I used to look like that. Used to dress like that. Talk like that.
Marianne, I say carefully, too aware of that knife in her hand. I'm Casey. This is Eric Dalton. You remember him, right? From Rockton. Dalton gives a start as if snapping out of the shock of seeing her.
Right. It's Eric.
He pauses for a second.
Eric Dalton. Jean was my father. We talked about biology. You specialized in black bears. I found papers you wrote on vocalizations and body language. I read them a few years ago. You were a professor at a university in Nova Scotia.
Her brow furrows, as if she's trying to understand the language he speaks. Intently trying to understand. She might even be struggling to hear. I see the blackened ear he mentioned, lost to frostbite. But there's more to her expression than incomprehension. It's as if she's peering deeper into that dark mirror, catching wisps of shadows that look like people she once knew.
Bears, she says.
Dalton nods.
Right. Eric,
Kenny says. Dalton lifts a hand to tell Kenny to stay where he is. He never takes his eyes from Marianne.
I found your camp after you left Rockton. I know something happened to you.
Eric, she says. The boy with the raven.
Right.
He shoots an almost sheepish glance at me and then looks back at Marianne.
I was trying to train a raven. I wanted to see if it could be taught to use tools. You told me there'd be studies on that, and you thought it might be possible.
Dalton has never told me this. That look says he finds it a little embarrassing now. But I remember when he first caught me training my raven. He rolled his eyes then, but I'd gotten a sense that my experiment pleased him.
Eric, with the raven, she says.
Then she pauses.
Eric, with the gun.
Yes. You wanted to learn to shoot. I showed you, but you couldn't actually do it. You couldn't shoot anything.
He's giving as much as he can, trying to prod those memories, like speaking to someone with amnesia. But I can tell he's not quite getting through. It's like talking to a small child, one who is listening mostly to the sound of your voice and picking up familiar words. She is making connections, though. She is remembering. And she is not attacking. That is the most important thing, because in her restraint, I see hope. The others attacked. The others now lie bloody on the ground. And yet it isn't fear that holds her back. She could have attacked. She could have fled. But she sees Dalton, and something has changed from the last time. The rage is gone.
"Do you remember Rockton?"
he asks.
"Where we lived. Where you met me?"
"Eric. The boy with the raven." He nods.
"I'm going back to Rockton. I would like you to come with me. You'll be safe there. We have..."
He pauses, as if struggling to remember something.
"We don't have ice cream. That's what you said you missed most from down south. Ice cream. But we've shaved frozen milk before. You can have that. It's like ice cream."
There's no sign that she understands what he's saying. But when he says,
"You'll come with me?"
She tilts her head, listening. I put out my hand, and she stares at it. "Come with us?" I say. She looks at Dalton. He moves my way, a sidestep, motioning for her.
"It's okay,"
he says.
"It's your choice. You can come with us, or..."
He doesn't say, or not. He glances at me, and we exchange a look that says that isn't an option. We want her to come willingly, but what is the alternative? To leave her out here with her people dead? There is opportunity here. So many opportunities. For her to return to what she had been. For Dalton to exorcise this particular ghost from his past. And yes, for me to answer my questions about the hostiles. Both Matthias and Cipher have said we need live subjects, and while the very concept has horrified me, Mary Ann is the perfect subject. Not a lab rat, but a woman we can help. We walk a few steps. Then we motion for her to come with us. She looks about. She sees the men on the ground, sees the two bodies, sees the two wounded. Then she nods, and I can't tell whether it's acceptance or satisfaction. Whether she sees her comrades fallen through their own mistakes, or her captors finally getting their comeuppance. Either way, she nods. And then, she follows. One step. Another. There's a noise behind us. Kenny or Storm must step in undergrowth, and it crackles beneath their feet. Mary Ann wheels. Dalton says,
"It's okay. We're..."
And I don't hear the rest. I see her face. I see her reaction, as pure and unthinking as my own. There is a noise in the forest. There is a threat. She catches sight of Jacob and Storm on the path and lets out a howl, barely human. She charges. I'm right behind her as she runs, knife raised. Jacob only yanks the dog back behind him, no panic, knowing he's fine. He realizes she's just startled, and he can stop her, or I will, or his brother will, and she is no threat. Dalton shouts,
"Mary Ann! It's okay!"
That's when she sees Jacob, sees his face, sees the resemblance to Dalton, and begins skidding to a stop, a few feet from him, and... a shot fires. For exactly 1 second, I think it's Dalton. Then I know it's not. Mary Ann may have been running toward his brother with a knife, but Dalton has both a brain and a conscience. He will not shoot until he is absolutely sure his brother is at risk.
"Case,"
Dalton begins, and then stops, having the exact same reaction as me. One moment of thinking I am shooting at Mary Ann before realizing I am not. Another shot, a half shout, then Mary Ann spins sideways. I run, and Jacob runs, and I hear Dalton's strangled cry and the thud of his footsteps.
Yet another shot. This one whips right past me, and I stop. I see Marianne. There's blood. She's standing against a tree, and there's blood. Mary...